Recently, the United States Supreme Court heard a challenge, a very serious challenge, to Roe v. Wade. And we're going to talk about that right now with Chelsea Uman, who is the Texas State Director and National Legislative Advisor at Human Coalition Action. She has testified before the Texas State Legislature on the state's heartbeat law. And she's also written an amicus brief, which we'll link to, in the Dobbs case, arguing that the Supreme Court should repeal Roe v. Wade. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And Chelsea, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Love being here. Thanks for having me.
Sure. You have been involved, obviously, in the pro-life movement for, you know, some while now. Would you say that in some ways December 1, 2021, was historic because of the Dobbs case heard before the Supreme Court, that honestly Roe v. Wade could possibly be challenged? I mean, it could be even overturned in this particular case because of this case.
Yes, it's absolutely historic. As you mentioned, it's actually the first challenge to Roe versus Wade in 30 years. I don't know if anyone is aware of that, but it's really, truly historic that the state of Mississippi went as far as to ask the court to overturn Roe. Not another state has done that in decades now. And the court certainly heard the case. As you could imagine, it was very contentious hearings. But I went in hopeful with the makeup of the Supreme Court, and I left pretty confident on where they stand on the Roe and Casey legal framework. And they were pretty open about the fact that it's time to revisit Roe, even going so far as Justice Kavanaugh to compare Roe and Casey with Plessy versus Ferguson, which legalized segregation, and saying that this is, you know, that would have been wrongly decided at the time and worthy of being overturned, even though it is a precedent.
Yeah, somebody once said, well, okay, just because the Supreme Court gets something wrong, let's say, here's a notorious example, the Dred Scott decision. Well, that was 1857, and just a few years later, the United States experienced the Civil War, and so, in effect, the Dred Scott decision was overturned because of the war. Okay, I can understand that. But in the case of you mentioned Plessy versus Ferguson, that was a notorious decision. It was kind of, basically, it was like institutionalizing racism. It said that the black schools can be separate but equal, but they weren't equal. They certainly were separate, but they weren't equal at all. And that was overturned by Brown versus Board of Education more than 50 years later. So in other words, just because something's in, you know, in place for more than 50 years doesn't make it right. And I think this is important because in effect, many of the left, those on the left are saying, oh, no, don't you touch Roe versus Wade. It's because it's a precedent. It's stare, you know, decisis. In fact, why don't you take a moment and explain that, since you're an attorney, this stare, you know, principle that governs so many decisions of the Supreme Court.
Well, Jerry, I think you're doing a great job covering it. It's like you have a law background. But I will just add to what you said. Precedents are overturned all the time. Every single term, the Supreme Court overturns old precedents because there's a standard for doing that when there's changes in law or fact, when science and medicine say that an old decision is developed and the old decision was wrongly decided, when there's a terrible societal fallout from a Supreme Court decision. All of these things are things the court can consider and do consider very often in overturning decisions. It's not until it's a contentious issue like abortion that you see the left absolutely flabbergasted and pretending to be principled about the law. That's just not the case. But all of those scenarios are true in the case of Roe versus Wade. We have seen an entire societal fallout, including damage to women, human trafficking, abuse to women, trafficking of fetal body tissue. I mean, the list goes on and on how horrific the damage to society is, let alone the 62 million lives that have been lost. So we, in our amicus brief, did put that before the court. We even talked in our amicus brief that abortion, in some sense, has been successful for an outcome in eugenics, for eliminating Down syndrome babies and minorities from our society. Almost half the black population is missing because of abortion, because 90% of Planned Parenthoods are within walking distance to black communities. I think those were all things the court should and must consider to really have a principled decision. And I know they're taking it very seriously and hope that they do the right thing.
Okay, good. Do me a favor. Speak closer to the microphone, if you would, for the rest of this discussion. I would appreciate that very much. Can you explain to us, Chelsea, the Mississippi law? How does it work?
The Mississippi law is a 15-week ban. The state of Mississippi looked at development in law, in medicine and science, which we know is on our side for the life movement, and realize that science shows us now that a child at 15 weeks in the womb feels pain. They can hear their mother's voice. They can move. They have all their fingers and toes. All of the developmental things we know about a child in the womb are present at 15 weeks. And so they drew the lot line there. But Roe and Casey say that a state is really not supposed to regulate abortion in this way before the 20-week viability mark. And so that's really what's before the court. The question before the court is, can a state regulate abortion before viability? And we certainly hope that the court says yes. Of course they have an interest in unborn children before they're viable. And we saw that debate before the court in oral arguments last week, you know, them talking about how arbitrary the viability line is, because if a baby can be killed at 21 weeks and not at 22 weeks, that's an arbitrary line of development. That's not rooted in science or medicine.
Okay. You mentioned the baby can feel pain at 15 weeks. Justice Sotomayor basically likened a fetus at that point to a brain-dead person. There may be somebody who's brain-dead, and you touch them in a certain spot, and all of a sudden there's a reflex action, but they're not really alive, and she was, you know, trying to take the fetus, the unborn babies down, you know, quite a bit in that remark.
Yes, she said that, and the irony of her statement, and really the horror of her statement, is the fact that she recognizes the human child.
Closer to the mic, closer to the mic, please.
The horrific nature of her statement is that she had to acknowledge that it was a human child and a dead human child in the womb. I mean, her statement acknowledges the killing of humans in the womb. And if you don't value humanity, then you would think that's okay. But really what she's standing for is death. And at the end of the day, it's not justifiable by convenience. It's not justifiable by a child being valued or wanted. We believe children are valuable because they're created in God's image with a purpose, and they are human. And so I think that there's some clear answers there. But, you know, the science says this is a human child, and I think that's what the court should focus on.
Okay. Justice Clarence Thomas made a good point. He said that, you know, if you're talking about the Second Amendment, let's say, I can understand because it's right there, you know, about the guns and, you know, what exactly does the Second Amendment mean and so forth. But when you talk about the right to abortion, now where exactly is that in the Constitution? Again, I'm paraphrasing here, but that's a good question. You know, where is the right to the, you know, and by the way, I remember reading Roe v. Wade years ago, and I was struck by the lack of any kind of constitutional reference, but there was a mention of the Ninth Amendment and the 14th Amendments. I've never forgotten that because it's not, that has nothing to do with abortion, but that's how, you know, at least they cited those two amendments.
It's very funny you bring this up, Jerry, because that question was posed to the attorneys arguing the case. Justice Thomas said, where is this right in the Constitution? Where is it? And she wouldn't answer it. She downright refused. He asked her four times, and he wouldn't answer it. She said, well, it's the right to privacy, but also the right to autonomy. And, you know, it really came out that what they're talking to is the right to an abortion. And it used to be rooted in the rights to privacy and autonomy, but those portions of the law have already been overturned. So it is convoluted, but you're absolutely right. The Constitution at the end of the day does not speak to a right to kill a child in the womb. There's no right to that in the Constitution. In fact, we believe life is the first human right, and that there is a right to life enshrined in the Constitution. So my hope for our movement is that's what we get enshrined next after hopefully Roe is overturned.
Your last statement of your amicus brief, and again, we'll link to it here. Scientific, factual, and legal development since Roe and Casey require it. And the statement before says Mississippi is well within its constitutional bounds to defend the rights of the unborn. So you're basically saying that scientific facts and legal developments since Roe, which is 1973, and Casey, 1992, they require that there have to be some changes in the law related to abortion. Okay, so let's just take a moment and talk about what has changed as far as science and facts and legal developments related to abortion since 1973.
Yes, well, we know so much about more about the child developing in the womb than we did back then. We know, for instance, that they have all of their chromosomes at conception. We know that the child in the womb, as Mississippi says, can feel pain at 15 weeks. We know the days their heartbeats begin in the womb. I mean, we know so much more about the humanity of the child, which has always been present at conception. But science has affirmed that the development of different sonograms and the 3D sonograms attest that this is no longer a clump of cells, which is the most unscientific argument I've ever heard in my life. So that's the developments in science. We just know more. But 95% of biologists agree, secular biologists agree, life begins at conception. That's happened in the last few years. And those are all changes in science that the court must consider when considering whether killing a human child in the womb should still be legalized. And then the other question in terms of law that's changed, and this is one that really is something the court used to rely on. They said, if you know, women need to have abortions to be successful, which is really an anti-feminist argument on the left. If you hear that, they're not a feminist. Women don't need abortion. Women are intelligent. They're capable. They might need help. They might need community assistance and churches to come alongside them. And, you know, they might need help, but women are capable. And the things that have changed in the law are things like sex discrimination laws have changed. Pregnancy discrimination laws in the workplace have changed. Women, there are things called safe haven laws now in effect, where in 73, if a woman had abandoned her child, she would have been criminalized for that. And now she can safely drop off her child at safe locations, including fire departments, if she feels she can't care for that child. And there's no repercussions to her. The child will be taken and hopefully cared for. But women can really be not held criminally liable if they don't want to care for their child. So those are a few examples. Adoption is on the rise. This just is not the same society as 1973, and it's time for our laws to reflect that.
Now, some on the left have basically painted a very dire picture if Roe v. Wade were to be overturned. What would happen if Roe v. Wade would be overturned?
I think a great example is the state of Texas, and it's not just my home state that I love, but they have successfully, for the first time in 50 years, regulated abortion after a heartbeat is detected now since September. And we've seen a lot of things happen. First, women seek out birth control in higher levels. Now they're aware and on notice of the law. If they become pregnant, they will keep their pregnancies. And so they're seeking out birth control. Two, they're still going out of state to have abortions. Other neighboring states like New Mexico and Colorado and Oklahoma and Louisiana, all women are just going elsewhere where other states are not regulating abortion in the same way. And then three, largely they're accepting of the law and most beautifully choosing life for their child and parenting and figuring it out. And our clinics who are serving these women day in and day out attest to that, that women are largely, they don't want abortion. They think it's their only option. And when that option is removed, they adapt and they're capable. And so I think that's the most beautiful outcome. And we could expect that if Roe is overturned. Some states will outlaw it entirely. Some states will regulate it. And then some states will continue to allow children to be killed in the womb up until birth. So that's what you can expect in the post-Roe landscape.
All right. Your website is HUCOaction.org. That's H-U-C-O as in human coalition. HUCOaction.org. Thank you so much, Chelsea. All the best to you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.